Chapter 20. Secrets and Lies. The cockroach darted under the door of room 66 and nearly jumped from its shell. It gawped at shattered glass, noosed dresses, three sleeping witches, and skittered out before any of them saw her. But one of them did see the roach, and the swan on its stomach. Antennae whisking right and left, Agatha tracked Sophie's perfume down crooked stairs and dank halls, nearly succumbing to a shifty male roach along the way, until she found its source in the common room. The first thing she saw inside was shirtless Hort, face clenched red like a toddler on the toilet. With a last grunt of effort, he peered down at his chest, and two brand new hairs sticking out of it.
Yeah, whose talent can beat that?
On the next couch, Sophie buried her nose deeper in, spellcasting for idiots. She heard two insect clicks and looked up urgently. Hort puffed his chest and winked. She turned in horror, then saw lipstick scrawled on the floor behind her couch. Bathroom, bring clothes. Sophie despised the evil bathrooms, but at least they were a safe place to meet. Nevers seemed to have a phobia of toilets and avoided them entirely. She had no idea what prompted this fear or where they relieved themselves, but she preferred not to think about it. The door moaned as she slipped into the dim iron cell. Two torches flickered on the rusted wall, elongating the shadows of stalls. As she crept towards the last one, slivers of pale skin peeked through iron slits. Clothes? Sophie slid them under the stall. The door opened and Agatha tramped out in Hort's frog pajamas, arms crossed.
I don't have anything else, Sophie whimpered. My roommates hanged all mine.
No one likes you these days, Agatha shot back, hiding her glowing finger.
I wonder why. Look, I'm sorry. I couldn't just go home. Not when I finally got my prince.
You got your prince.
Well, it was mostly me.
You said you wanted to go home. You said we're a team. That's why I helped you.
We are a team, Agatha. Every princess needs a sidekick.
Sidekick. Sidekick, Agatha shouted.
Well, let's see how our heroine manages all by herself.
She broke away. Sophie grabbed her arm.
I tried to kiss him, but he doubts me now.
Let go.
I need your help.
And I won't give it, Agatha spat, elbowing past her. You're a liar, a coward, and a fraud.
Then why did you even come?
Sophie said, eyes welling.
Watch out. Crocodile tears mean crocodile wrinkles,
Agatha sneered from the door.
Please, I'll do anything,
Sophie blubbered. Agatha swiveled.
Swear you'll kiss him the first chance you get. Swear on your life.
I swear, Sophie cried. I want to go home. I don't want them to kill me.
Agatha stared at her.
Huh?
Complete with voices and gestures, Sophie hysterically replayed the faculty meeting, failed challenges, and fight with Tedros.
We're getting too close to the end, Sophie, Agatha said, now ghost white. Someone always dies at the end of a fairy tale.
What do we do now?
Sophie squeaked.
You win that trial and kiss Tedros the moment you do.
But I can't survive. I have 3 hours alone without Tedros protecting me.
You won't be alone, Agatha grumped.
I won't?
You'll have Fairy Godroach under your collar, conjuring you out of trouble.
Only this time, if you don't kiss your prince on cue, I'll curse you with every evil spell I know until you do.
Sophie threw her arms around her.
Oh, Agatha, I'm a terrible friend, but I'll have my whole life to make it up to you.
Footsteps echoed down the hall.
Go, Agatha whispered. I need to mogrify.
Sophie gave her a last hug and, aglow with relief, snuck from the bathroom and back to Hort's protection.
A minute later, a cockroach followed and dashed for the stairwell. Neither noticed the red tattoo smouldering through shadows. Per tradition, there were no classes the day before the trial. Instead, the 15 ever and 15 never challengers were given time to scout the Blue Forest. So while unpicked students worked on circus talents, Sophie followed Tedros through the gates, keenly aware of the chill between them. Though the rest of the grounds had fallen prey to a slow autumnal death, the Blue Forest glistened, lush as ever in midday sun. All week, the students had tried to wheedle out of their teachers what obstacles the challengers would face, but they professed ignorance. The schoolmaster designed the trial in secret, giving professors only the power to secure its borders. Teachers couldn't even watch the contest, since he cast a veiling spell over the Blue Forest for the whole night.
"The schoolmaster forbids our interference," Professor Dovey mumbled to her class, clearly distraught. "He prefers trials to simulate the dangers of the woods beyond reason or responsibility."
But as the competitors crowded into the forest behind Sophie and Tedros, none of them could believe that a night from now, this beautiful playground would turn into a hellish gauntlet. Together, the evers and nevers herded past the sparkling fronds of the fern field, snacking possums in the pine glen, the blue brook tumbling with trout, before they remembered they were enemies and split up. Tedros shoved past Sophie.
"Follow me."
"I'll go on my own," she said softly. "I haven't earned your protection." Tedros turned.
"Beatrix said you cheated to get to number one. Is that true?"
"Of course not."
"Then why did you fail all the pre-trial challenges?"
Tears pearled Sophie's eyes.
"I wanted to prove I could survive without you, so you'd be proud of me."
Tedros stared at her.
"You lost on purpose?"
She nodded.
"Are you insane?" he exploded. "The Nevers, they'll kill you."
"You'd risk your life to prove I'm good," Sophie sniffled. "I'm willing to fight for you too."
For a moment, Tedros looked like he might clobber her. Then the red seeped from his cheeks, and he grabbed her in his arms.
"When I come through those gates, promise me you'll be there."
"I promise," Sophie wept. "For you, I promise."
Tedros gazed into her eyes. Sophie puckered her perfectly glossed lips.
"You're right. You should explore on your own," her prince said, pulling away. "You need to feel confident in here without me, especially after losing so many challenges."
But...
"Stay away from Nevers, all right?"
He squeezed her hand and sprinted to catch up with Everboys in the pumpkin patch. Jaddick's sharp voice echoed,
"Still a villain, mate. Won't get special treatment from us."
Sophie didn't hear Tedros's response. She stood alone in the silent glen, under a blue mistletoe tree.
"We're still here," she grouched.
"Maybe if you had delivered my lines like I said them," the roach retorted under her collar.
3 hours alone isn't so bad," Sophie sighed. "I mean, Nevers can't use non-approved spells. All we can do is start a storm or turn into a sloth. What could they possibly do to me?" Something grazed her head. She whipped around and saw a gash in the oak trunk right where she was standing. Impish Vex straddled a branch above her, sharp stick in hand.
"Just curious to see how tall you were," Vex said.
Doughy bald Brone waddled in from behind another oak and checked the mark.
"Yeah, she'll fit."
Sophie gaped at them.
"Like I said," Vex said, wagging pointy ears. "Just curious."
"I'm going to die,"
Sophie wailed as she fled the forest. "Not with me there," Agatha said, pincers curled. "I beat them all in your classes, and we'll beat them again tomorrow. Just focus on getting the kiss." Something smacked her head. "What in the..." Agatha looked down at a dead roach in the grass. Four more landed beside it. Slowly, Sophie and Agatha craned up to see the evil towers billowing pink mist, dead insects raining off balconies into the clearing.
"What's going on?" Sophie said.
"Extermination," a voice answered.
Sophie turned to Hester, arms folded against the forest gates.
"Apparently, they've been running around our school at night. Couldn't have the risk of plague, of course, after your friend was sick."
Hester picked a thrashing bug off her shoulder.
"Besides, a good reminder to anything that tries to go where it doesn't belong, don't you think?"
She licked the roach into her mouth and glided back into the forest, leaves crunching underfoot. Sophie gasped.
"Do you think she knows you're a roach?"
"Of course she knows, you idiot." Neva's voices neared from the forest. "Go," Agatha hissed, scrambling down Sophie's leg. "We can't meet again."
"Wait, how do I survive the trial?"
But Agatha had vanished into the good tunnel, leaving Sophie to fend for herself. With the fairies doing curfew inspections from the first floors up, Agatha had just enough time to sneak to the breezeways and cross to Valor. Like all the teachers, Seda's bedchamber adjoined his study. Break its lock, and she could surprise him in his bed. She didn't care if the creep didn't want to answer questions. She'd tie him to his bed if she had to. Agatha knew it was a terrible plan, but what choice did she have? She couldn't sneak into the trial now, and Sophie would never last alone for 3 hours. Seda was their last hope to get home. The stairs led right to his study, the lone door on Valor's 6th floor. There was a stream of raised blue dots across its marble. Agatha ran her finger over them.
"No students allowed on this floor," boomed Seda's voice. "Return to your room immediately."
Agatha grabbed the doorknob and pointed her glowing finger at the lock. The door creaked open on its own. Seda wasn't inside, but he hadn't been gone long. The sheets in his bedroom were rumpled, the tea on his desk warm. Agatha skulked around his study, its shelves, chairs, floor, all suffocated with books. The desk was buried 3 feet under them, but there were a few open on top of the pile. Lines of colorful dots highlighted by prickly silver stars in the margins. She swept her hand across one of these marked lines, and a misty scene exploded out of the book to a woman's sharp voice.
"A ghost cannot rest until it has fulfilled its purpose. For that, it must use the body of a seer."
Agatha watched a scraggy ghost crash into the body of a bearded old man, before the mist cycloned back into the page. She touched the starred lines in the next book.
"In a seer's body, a spirit may last only seconds before both seer and spirit will be destroyed."
Before her eyes, two floating bodies merged, then crumbled to dust. She ran her fingers across more of the starred lines.
"Only the strongest seers can host a spirit. Most seers die before the ghost ever takes hold."
Agatha grimaced. What was his obsession with seer? Her heart stopped. "Prophecy," said the teachers. Could Seda see the future? Could he see if they got home?
"Agatha!"
Professor Dovey gaped through the doorway.
"Seda's alarm! I thought it was a roach! A student! Out of bed after curfew?"
Agatha scurried past her for the stairs.
"2 weeks cleaning toilets,"
her teacher squawked. Agatha glanced back to see Professor Dovey sweep her hands over Seda's books with a frown. She caught Agatha watching and magically slammed the door. That night, both girls dreamt of home. Sophie dreamt she was fleeing Hester through pink fog. She tried to scream Agatha's name, but a roach crawled from her mouth instead. At last, she found a stone well and swam to its bottom, only to find herself in Gavaldon. She felt strong arms, and her father carried her to her house, which smelled of meat and milk. She needed the toilet, but he took her to the kitchen, where a pig hung on a gleaming hook. A woman drummed red nails on the counter. Tisk, tisk, tisk.
Mother?
Sophie cried. Before the woman could turn, her father kissed Sophie goodnight, opened the oven, and threw her in. Sophie woke with a jolt so hard, she smashed her head on the wall and knocked herself out. Agatha dreamt Gavaldon was on fire. A trail of burning black dresses led her up Graves Hill, and when she got to the top, she found a grave instead of her house. She heard sounds from within and started digging, hearing voices now, nearer, nearer, until she woke to them next door.
You said it was important, Tedros barked.
The Nevers said she cheats with Agatha, Beatrix said.
Sophie's not friends with Agatha. Agatha's a witch.
They both are. Agatha turns into a cockroach to give her answers.
A cockroach? You're not just petty and jealous, but completely insane.
They're both villains, Teddy. They're using you.
You're the one listening to Nevers. You know why Sophie lost those challenges? She wanted to keep me safe. If that's a villain, then what are you?
With wind rumpling her curtains, Agatha couldn't hear the rest, but soon the door thumped and Tedros traipsed away. Agatha tried to go back to sleep, but found herself staring at the pink paper flower shivering on her marble night table, like a rose on a grave. She yelped, clobbered by an idea. All the rooms in the hall looked dark, except for the trial Evers, who was staying up until dawn to prepare for the following night. In her lace dressing gown, Agatha tiptoed barefoot up the pink glass staircase, eyes pinned upward for fairies or teachers. Five floors down, Tedros glared up at her through the spiral gap, suddenly wondering if Beatrix had told the truth. Leaving his boots at the bottom, he followed Agatha through the breezeway to Honor's fourth floor, occupied entirely by the Library of Virtue. Crouching in knee-high black socks, he peeked in to see her disappear into the gold colosseum of books. Two stories high and impeccably kept by a leathery tortoise, fast asleep on a titanic library log, feathered pen in hand. As soon as Agatha found what she needed, she sneaked out past the reptile and the prince, who failed to get a glimpse of the book in her hands. Her steps diminished in the sea-blue breezeway, and soon she was gone. Tedros clenched his teeth. What murderous plan did the witch have? Was Sophie in on it and planning to betray him? Were the two villains still friends? The prince lurched to his feet, heart thundering, then heard an odd scratching sound. Turning, he saw the feathered pen magically finish writing in the tortoise's log and fall back into the snoring creature's hand. Eyes narrowed, he moved in to peer at the log. Flower power, plant charms for a happier world. Agatha, Purity 51. Tedros snorted. Berating himself for doubting his princess, he went to retrieve his boots. The rules of the trial by tale were few and precise. At the moment the sun went down, the first two challengers would enter the Blue Forest. Every 15 minutes, another two would enter, according to their pre-trial ranks, until the last pair entered more than 3 hours after the first. Once inside, Nevers could attack Evers with their talents and any spell learned in class, while Evers could defend themselves with approved weapons or counterspells. The schoolmaster's conjures would hunt them both. There were no other rules. It was the challenger's duty to recognize mortal danger and drop his enchanted handkerchief. The moment it touched the ground, he would be safely removed from the trial. Upon the first glint of sunrise, the wolves would call the end, and whoever returned through the gates would be named the winner. There had never been more than one. Quite often there were none at all. Winter arrived with naughty timing, blowing glacial gusts into the clearing just as the challengers entered. Everboys each carried a blue kite-shaped shield matching their navy cloak and a single weapon. Most had chosen bows and arrows, blunted by Professor Espada to stun rather than injure, though Chadwick and Tedros had opted for heavy training swords. Nearby Evergirls quietly practiced their animal calls and tried to look as helpless as possible so boys would take them under their wings. Across the field, the trial Nevers hunched against bare trees in their cloaks, eyeing unchosen students crowd in from the tunnels. The unpicked Evers were ready for a slumber party, with pillows, blankets, baskets of spinach mousselines, creamy chicken crepes, bell pepper skewers, elderflower custard, and pitchers of cherry grenadine. Meanwhile, the unpicked Nevers hovered near their tunnel, in slippers and nightcaps, ready to flee at their team's first sign of humiliation. While the wolves passed out the enchanted silk handkerchiefs, white for Evers, red for Nevers, Castor and Pollux lined up the competitors in order of their entrance. Because they fared worst in pre-trial challenges, Sophie and Kiko would enter exactly at sundown. Brone and Tristan would enter 15 minutes later, then Vex and Rena 15 minutes after that, and the pairs would continue until Hester and Tedros entered last. At the back of the line, the prince took his white handkerchief from the wolf.
"Won't be needing this," he muttered, and stuffed it in his boot.
At the front of the line, Sophie clenched her red handkerchief, ready to drop it the moment she entered. She wished she had paid more attention during the fitting. Her tunic drooped at the bosom, the cloak dragged on the ground, and the blue hood fell so far over her face it looked like she had no hair. How could she think about clothes? Frantic, she scanned the crowd. Still no sign of Agatha.
"We've heard rumors that unqualified students may try to sneak into the trial," Pollux said next to Castor, an imposing two-headed shadow in waning light. "This year, we've taken extra precautions."
At first, Sophie thought he was referring to the wolves guarding every inch of gate. But then Castor lit a torch, and she saw the gates were no longer made of gold, but of giant black and red spiders, crisscrossing magically with stingers poised. Her heart sank. How could she sneak Agatha in now?
"If anyone cheats, they deserve to die." She turned. "And I don't put it past any of those villains," Tedros said, golden cheeks ruddy with cold.
He took her hand, still gripping her kerchief.
"You can't, Sophie. You can't drop it."
Without Agatha feeding lines, Sophie just nodded helplessly.
"When we team up, they'll do anything to take one of us out. Evers, Nevers, Schoolmaster too," said her prince. "We need to protect each other. I need you to have my back."
Sophie nodded.
"You don't have anything to say?"
"A kiss for luck?" she squeaked.
"In front of the whole school?" Tedros cocked a smile. "That's an idea."
Sophie lit up and thrust out her lips with relief.
"A long one," she sighed, "just in case."
"Oh, I'll give you a long one," he grinned, "when we win. Right before I carry you into the good castle."
Sophie gagged.
"Suppose we don't?"
Tedros gently pulled the red silk from her trembling fingers.
"We're good, Sophie," he said, tucking it deep in her coat pocket. "And good always wins."
In his clear blue eyes, Sophie saw Hester reflected behind her, hood lowered like the Grim Reaper. In a flash, the wolves shoved her and Kiko to opposite ends of the north gate. Hairy spiders hissed in her face, and she lost her breath. Panicked, her eyes lurched to the schoolmaster's tower, lording over the forest. In the last shred of sun, she could see his silhouette, watching from the window. Sophie whipped around, looking for Agatha to save her, but all she saw was the sky fall dark over the forest. From the schoolmaster's tower came a blast of silver sparks that veiled the forest in a blurring haze.
"First pair ready!"
Castor boomed. "No, wait!" Paws grabbed Sophie from behind and flung her into the spiders. Hundreds of furry pincers probed her skin as she screamed. Clicking with permission, they magically parted, leaving her alone in the forest's torch-lit threshold. Wolves howled. Spiders sealed behind her. The trial had begun. Chapter 21 Trial by Tale. Terrified, Sophie spun towards Kiko. They had to stay together, but Kiko was scampering east towards the blueberry fields, peeping back to make sure she wasn't following. Quickly, Sophie took the west trail towards the Blue Brook, where she could hide under its bridge. She had expected the forest to be pitch dark and made Hort teach her a fire spell during breakfast, but tonight the trees fluoresced with an ice-blue, black-lit sheen, glazing the forest in arctic glow. Though the effect was ominous, she breathed relief. A flaming torch would have made her an easy target. As she waded into the fern field, Sophie felt electric blue fronds kiss her neck. Her body relaxed. She'd imagined a non-stop siege of horrors, but the forest was quieter than she'd ever seen it. No skulking animals, no ominous howls. Just her, in an ethereal meadow, wind strumming blades like harp strings. As she waded through head-high ferns, she thought of Agatha. Did a teacher catch her brewing a plan? Did Hester intercept her? Sophie felt pinpricks of sweat. Or is Agatha afraid to help me? For if she won with Tedros, no one could deny her switching schools. She could rule good as their beneficent captain. She could have her prince forever after, and the life of a queen. Sophie gritted her teeth. If only she hadn't made that promise about going home. If only she could win this trial alone, then she wouldn't have to keep it. She stopped in her tracks. But I can. Look at me. I'm doing just fine. A scream echoed. White sparks sprayed into the sky. Kiko had surrendered. Sophie's legs jellied. How long would it take Kiko's attacker to find her? What was she thinking? She couldn't last here. She yanked the kerchief from her pocket, unleashed vermilion red, and... crack! Something dropped from above and landed at her feet. She stared down at a scroll of parchment, wrapped with a strip of fabric. Fabric glowing with angry green frogs. Sophie looked up and saw a white dove high above the trees. The dove tried to fly down. Crack! A barrier of flames exploded across the sky if it even got close to the trees. The faculty had taken no chances. Sophie urgently pulled open the scorched scroll. Go to the tulip garden. Once your finger glows, put a tulip bud under your tongue and say Floradora Floriana. You'll turn into a baby tulip. I'll lead you. Hurry, Agatha. Sophie slumped with relief. A tulip. No one would ever find her. Oh, how could she doubt Agatha? Sweet, loyal Agatha. Sophie guiltily balled the red kerchief back in her pocket and followed the dove. To get to the tulip garden by trail, she'd have to cross the turquoise thicket, then the pumpkin patch, and finally the sleeping willow bosque. As she followed Agatha out of the ferns into the dense thicket, phosphorescent leaves lit up the trail with wintry blue light. Sophie could see every scratch and scar on the loosened trunks, including the gash Vex had made above her head. Wind suddenly swept through, and leaves flickered over the trail. She couldn't see Agatha through the treetops. Sophie heard muffled grunts. Human? Animal? But she didn't stop to find out. Kiko's scream thundering in her head, she fled down the trail, snatching at her dragging cloak. Tripping over shrubs and stumps, she ducked stabbing boughs, flung through tentacles of blue leaves, until she glimpsed pumpkins and an impatient dove between two shining tree trunks. Someone stood between them, a little girl in a red cape and hood.
"Excuse me?" Sophie called. "I need to pass."
The red-headed stranger looked up. It wasn't a child at all. She had cloudy blue eyes, rosy blush on her wrinkled, spotted cheeks, and thick grey hair pulled into two ponytails. Sophie frowned. She loathed old women.
"I said I need to pass."
The woman didn't move. Sophie marched towards her.
"Are you deaf?"
The crone dropped her red cloak and revealed a hawk's dirty, bloated body. Sophie shrank back, heard an ear-splitting caw, and swiveled to two more old bird women moving towards her. Harpies. Agatha had taught her sweet talkers, blind walkers. Then she saw their gnarled talons tapping sharp as blades. Child eaters. They pounced with terrible screams, and Sophie ducked under a wing as the shrieking monsters dove after her, ugly faces contorted with rage. She raced through bushes to hide, but every corner of the thicket was spotlit blue. Harpies snapped at her neck, and she fumbled for her pocket, touching red silk. Her cloak snagged her foot, and she crashed in mulch. Claws sank into her back, and she screamed as she was lifted off ground, flailing for her kerchief. The harpies opened their jaws to her face. The thicket went dark. Shrieks of confusion, claws released her, and Sophie plunged into dirt. In blackness, she scrambled through gouging twigs until her hands found a log, and she hid behind it. She could hear talons scraping blindly through dirt, furious grunts growing closer. Sophie sprang back and slammed into a rock with a cry. The monsters heard her and lunged for her head. The thicket lit back up. The harpies craned their beaks to see Agatha the dove hovering high, wingtip glowing orange. Agatha waved her wing, and the thicket went dark. Agatha waved it again, and the thicket went light. Dark, then light. Dark, then light. Until the harpies got the point, and two flew for Agatha, who squawked fearfully in place.
"Fly!"
Sophie screamed. But Agatha flailed and thrashed as if she'd forgotten how. Twin monsters gnashed for the helpless dove, tearing higher, faster, until they had her in claws' reach. Flames exploded across the barrier with a cruel crack, and they fell, charred feathers and flesh. The last harpy gawked at their smoking bodies. Slowly it looked up. Agatha smiled and waved her glowing wing. The thicket lit up. The monster swiveled. Sophie smashed its head with a rock. In the forest's silence, she panted and bled, alone on the ground, legs shaking under her cloak. Sophie glared into the sky.
"I want to switch places!"
But the dove was already halfway to the pumpkin patch. Sophie could do nothing but follow miserably, hand gripping her kerchief inside her pocket. Across the silent patch, pumpkins fluoresced a thousand shades of blue. Sophie stepped onto the dirt trail that snaked through the lit orbs, mumbling to herself that these were pumpkins, only pumpkins, and even a schoolmaster couldn't make one scary. She rushed ahead to keep up with Agatha, dark silhouettes on the trail. Two people in front of her.
"Hello?"
Sophie called. They didn't move. Heart thundering, Sophie stepped closer. There were more than two. 10 at least.
"What do you want?"
she screamed. No answer. She inched closer. They were 7 feet tall, with spindly bodies, faces like skulls, and crooked hands made of straw. Scarecrows. Sophie exhaled. The scarecrows lined both sides of the trail, dozens of them on wooden crosses, guarding the pumpkins with outstretched arms.
From behind, glowing pumpkins lit their profiles, revealing shredded brown shirts, bald burlap heads, and black witch hats. As she walked slowly between them, Sophie saw their terrible faces, eye holes ripped out of burlap, jagged pig noses, and sewn lecherous grins. Spooked, she hurried forward, eyes on the path.
Help me.
She froze. The voice came from the scarecrow next to her. A voice she knew.
It can't be, Sophie thought. She pushed on. Help me, Sophie.
Now there was no mistaking it. Sophie willed herself forward.
My mother's dead.
I'm inside, the voice rasped behind her, weak with agony. Sophie's eyes filled with tears.
She's dead. I'm trapped.
Sophie turned. The scarecrow wasn't a scarecrow anymore. A man she knew gazed back at her from the wooden cross. Under the black hat, his eyes were grey and pupilless. Instead of hands, he had two meat hooks. Sophie paled.
Father?
He cracked his neck and carefully pried himself from his cross. Sophie backed up, right into another scarecrow. It was her father, too, resting off his cross. Sophie whirled, and all the scarecrows were her father, climbing off their stakes and walking towards her, meat hooks gleaming in chilly blue light.
Father, it's me!
They kept coming. Sophie backed against a cross.
It's me! Sophie!
Far ahead, the dove looked back and saw Sophie cowering, screaming, as scarecrows stood, peacefully still on the sides of the trail. Agatha yelped. Sophie tripped on a pumpkin and fell. She spun to see her father's face again and again, devoid of mercy.
Father, please!
The scarecrows raised their hooks. Sophie's heart stopped. She choked a last breath and closed her eyes to slashing steel. Water. Cool, pristine water. Her eyes fluttered open to a storm. The patch was deserted, just scarecrows on crosses, falling to pieces in rain. Hovering high in the storm, Agatha waved her glowing wing, and the rain stopped. Sophie crumpled to the flooded path.
I can't survive this.
Howls in the distance. Her eyes widened. The next pair had entered the forest. Alarmed, the dove shrieked back at her and flew towards the willow bosque. Shivering, Sophie staggered up and followed, shaken that a heart so haunted could still keep beating. The long, thin trail through the sleeping willows sloped downhill, so Sophie could see the ghostly blue glow of the tulip garden at the bottom. One last push, and she'd be safe among its flowers. For a moment, she questioned why Agatha hadn't made her turn into a tree or a blade of grass near the gates, then remembered that Yuba had taught them to spot enchanted trees, and that grass would be trampled by night's end. No, Agatha had chosen well. One tulip in thousands. She'd be safe till dawn. As Sophie crept through the willows, her eyes darted around for the next threat. But the sapphire trees stood sentinel along the trail, long dangling branches glittering like chandeliers. As she drifted through, leaves shed over her in slow, beautiful rhythm, beads slipping off bracelets. Something is here. Don't be fooled. Wolves howled again at the gates, and her stomach seized. At least four others in the forest now. Brone, Tristan. Then who? Why hadn't she learned the order? She had to get to the tulips before they found her. Sophie broke into a breathless sprint, chasing the dove ahead. She didn't notice that the faster she ran, the faster the starry willow leaves shed, showering her in suspicious comets of light. Then her head went heavy, her legs weak.
No.
Assaulted by leaves, she slowed to a stumbling limp.
Sleeping willows.
Flying overhead, Agatha looked down and screeched.
Sophie lumbered forward, smelling the tulips. Few more steps.
She collapsed, the flowers 10 feet away.
Agatha waved her glowing wing, sparking an explosion of thunder.
Sophie didn't move.
Agatha tried spells for rain, sleet, snow, but no response. Frantic, she squawked Sophie's favorite song, a wretched ode to princes and weddings.
Sophie's eyes peeked open.
Ecstatic, the dove kept warbling, more off-key with every note.
Agatha choked. Blue hoods. 2 in the thicket, 2 in the pumpkin patch, 2 more near the gates. She couldn't tell who they were, but they were all frozen,
carefully discerning the precise source of the song they'd just heard.
Then they started running towards the tulips.
Agatha glanced at Sophie, splayed in dirt, then at blue hoods coming to kill her. On the ground, Sophie dug her nails into earth and nosed forward a few inches. Sensing her escape, the willows shed faster, paralyzing her muscles.
Agatha flailed helplessly, dovebeak whipping between Sophie and her hunters.
Panting, grunting, Sophie clawed herself through the last patch of willows, dirt turning to loamy petals beneath her. Exultant, she collapsed into big blue flowers and inhaled their scent, reviving instantly. She shoved a tulip bud in her mouth, grabbed Agatha's note from her pocket, finger glowing pink.
Floradora, Fleur...
She froze. Across the tulip garden, Brone and Vex smiled back at her, 2 tiny white fish thrashing in their hands.
That's how you're going to kill me, Sophie snorted. Fish?
Wish fish, Brone corrected, fish turning black in their hands.
And we wish to be hench captains, Vex smirked.
The boys hurled the fish into the air. Instantly, they ballooned, big as Sophie's body, and dove for her, snapping piranha teeth. Petrified, Sophie closed her eyes, felt her finger burn. Poof! Her pink fox dodged the swollen fish, which careened off the ground like bouncing balls. Sophie sprinted for her life between them, paws slipping on tulips.
Faster! Need something faster!
Her finger glowed, ready to help.
Cheetah? Lion? Tiger? Poof!
She was a slow pink warthog, waddling and farting.
Sophie grunted in horror. The bouncy fish careened off a tree and lunged for her hide.
She thrust out her glowing hoof, focused harder. Poof! She hurtled between them, a pink gazelle, and heard the fish crash into each other. Sophie limped into a clearing, heaving for air. Faint wolf howls at the gate sent shudders through her fur. More enemies on the way. Her big green eyes searched the dark sky for Agatha. Nothing but stars winking back at her. She looked back down and jumped. Across the clearing, Tristan and Chadwick stood in the moonlight. Face ice cold, Tristan drew an arrow into his bow. Chadwick pulled his sword. Sophie turned to run. Rena blocked her escape. The Arabian princess whistled, and 2 golden wolf dogs slunk into the clearing behind her, bearing knife-sharp teeth. Sophie spun to see Arachne skulk out of the trees, finger glowing. 2 more Everboys drew arrows into their bows. Legs quivering, Sophie's pink gazelle stood surrounded, waiting for her white dove to rescue her.
Now!
Chadwick screamed. Boys unleashed arrows. Arachne stabbed her finger. 2 dogs lunged as Sophie thrust out her shaking pink paw, closed her eyes. Arrows and curses sailed over her scaly rattlesnake head. Sophie hissed in relief, slithering towards the safety of trees, until a shadow cast over her. Rena's wolf dog pounced and grabbed her in its mouth. Furious, Sophie felt her snake rattle burn pink. Elephant buttocks crushed the dog's head as Sophie stampeded out of the clearing, trunk trumpeting in terror. Everboy arrows slammed into her massive pink rump, and she crumpled to the grass in pain. Sophie glanced back at 10 hooded assassins and 2 chomping fish bouncing right for her. Helplessly cornered, she raised her glowing elephant trunk. Curses, arrows, swords, fish grazed her feathers as Sophie's pink lovebird flapped into the air. Screeching with triumph, she flew higher, higher, out of arrow reach, then saw the glint of flames at the barrier. Sophie recoiled in shock, only to feel something snare her wing. Slowly, a whip of water drew her towards a hooded figure in the blue brook. Sophie shrieked for help, but then more whips ensnared her, pulling her through branches to her captor in the stream, who lashed the water with a glowing green finger. Slowly, the waters delivered Sophie's lovebird into ashen hands as the shadow pulled back its hood.
"You would have made a great witch, Sophie," Anadil said, stroking her beak. "Even better than me."
The lovebird gazed up at her with pleading eyes. Anadil's fingers crushed its tiny throat. The bird thrashed for breath, but Anadil pressed harder, and as Sophie's eyes went dark, she knew the last thing she'd ever see was a flaming star fall majestically through sky, falling straight for the witch about to snap her neck. In a flash, a burning dove thieved Sophie out of Anadil's hands into wings of fire and up through frigid sky. As arrows tore through treetops, Agatha thrust out her glowing wingtip, and arrows turned to daisies in the wind. She flew as long as she could on fire, Sophie clasped in her feet, then plunged into a dark pine glen, and the birds smashed to the ground, tumbling over each other, snuffing out the flames. Whimpering, Agatha struggled to make her charred wing glow. It flickered. She and Sophie instantly turned human, both paralyzed with pain. Sophie glimpsed Agatha's bare arms, blistered with burns. Before Sophie could cry out, Agatha's eyes widened, and she circled her glowing orange fingertip around them. "Floradora Pinscoria!" They both turned to scrawny blue pine shrubs. Anadil stormed into the glen with Arachne. They peered into the deserted path.
"I told you they landed in the pumpkins," Arachne said. "Then lead the way," said Anadil. "Which of us gets to kill her?" Arachne said, turning.
Anadil stunned her with a lightning bolt. She stripped the red kerchief from Arachne's pocket and threw it to the ground. Red sparks shot into the air, and Arachne vanished into thin air.
"Me," Anadil said.
Red eyes narrowed. She took one last long look around.
"Nick, I saw her over here," called Chadwick nearby.
Anadil smiled wickedly and headed in his direction. In the dark, silent glen, 2 shrubs shivered side by side. The night had just begun. Outside the Golden Gates, the unchosen Evers and Nevers waited for Sophie's name to vanish off the scoreboard like Kiko's and Arachne's. But as the hours passed and more names vanished, Nicholas, Mona, Tristan, Vex, Tarquin, Rena, Giselle, Brone, Chadwick, Anadil, Sophie's stubbornly remained. Had Sophie and Tedros united? What would their victory mean? A prince and witch? Together? As the hours passed, good and evil shared looks across the clearing, first threatened, then curious, then hopeful. And before they knew it, they were drifting into each other's sides, sharing blankets, crepes, and cherry grenadine. Evil thought it had corrupted good, and good thought it had enlightened evil. But it didn't matter, for 2 sides soon turned into 1, cheering on the prince-witch revolution. Inside the cold pine glen, 2 shrubs waited. They waited through silence split open by screams. They waited through sounds of classmates fighting enemies and betraying friends. They waited as something snared child after child with angry splashes in the brook. They waited as drooling trolls stomped past them, brandishing blood-stained hammers. They waited as red and white sparks painted the sky, until only 4 competitors remained.
Then the blue forest went quiet for a very long time. Hunger tore at their stomachs, cold glazed their leaves with frost. Sleep attacked their senses, but the two plants stayed rooted still until the sky bruised blue. Sophie held her breath, willing the sun to break through. Tedros limped into the glen. He had no cloak, no sword, only a brutally dented shield. His tunic was torn to shreds, the silver swan on his bare chest gleaming against welts and blood. The prince gazed into the lightning sky. Then he crumpled against a skeletal pine, sniffling softly. "Corpadora Volvera," Agatha whispered. "That's the counterspell. Go to him." "When the sun comes up," Sophie whispered back. "He needs to know you're okay."
"He'll know in a few more minutes."
Tedros bolted straight.
"Who's there?"
His eyes moved to Agatha's and Sophie's shrubs. Someone stepped from their shadows. Tedros backed against a tree.
"Where's your witch?"
Hester hissed, unscathed in a clean cloak.
"Safe," Tedros said hoarsely.
"Ah, I see," Hester smirked. "So much for your team."
The prince tensed.
"She knows I'm safe, too. Otherwise she'd be here to fight with me."
"Are you sure about that?"
Hester said, black eyes flashing.
"That's what makes us good, Hester. We trust. We protect. We love. What do you have?"
Hester smiled.
"Bait."
She thrust out her glowing and red fingertip, and the tattoo peeled off her neck, swelling with blood. Tedros backed up in shock as her demon engorged with blood, tighter, tighter, about to burst. Hissing an incantation, Hester's eyes grayed and her skin lost all color. She sank to the ground in agony and howled in fury as if tearing her own soul apart. Then the demon's body parts detached from each other. Head, two arms, two legs. Five fractured pieces, each one alive. Tedros turned snow white. The five demon pieces blasted towards him, conjuring daggers instead of firebolts. He bludgeoned the stabbing head and leg with his shield, but an arm sank a dagger into his thigh. With a cry, he batted the arm away, pulled the knife out of his leg, and clawed up the only tree in the glen. Agatha's shrub whipped to Sophie. "Help him."
"And end in five pieces?"
Sophie shot back. "He needs you."
"He needs me to be safe."
A demon leg hurled a knife at the prince's head, and he jumped just in time to a higher branch. The other four limbs ripped toward him, dagger raised. Trapped, he glanced down at Hester, weak on her knees. Directing the demon fragments with a glowing finger, Tedros's eyes widened, spotting something through the leaves. Red silk? In her boot? The fragments unleashed five knives point-blank, all aimed for his organs. Just as they pierced his shirt, he jumped out of the tree and landed on his wrist with a sickening crack. Hester saw him scraping towards her. She circled her finger savagely, bringing the demon parts back around with new knives. Tedros held her glare as he crawled towards her. Sneering, Hester raised her finger high, and the demon limbs coiled back to kill him. This time, there would be no mistake. She roared, and the knives stabbed down. The prince lunged for her boot. Hester's mouth opened in horror as Tedros pinned her red handkerchief to the ground. The knives clinked limply to dirt, and the demon parts vanished. Then, Hester vanished too, eyes shocked wide. Tedros collapsed on his back. Heaving for breath, he squinted into the pink sky. The sun was coming.
"Sophie," he croaked.
He took a deep breath.
"Sophie!"
Agatha's leaves drooped in relief. Then she saw Sophie's shrub pruning its leaves.
"What are you—"
"Go, you fool!"
Agatha, I don't have clothes.
At least call to him so he kno- Agatha stopped. On the ground, a demon arm hadn't fully vanished. It was flickering in mid-air, willing itself to stay. Then it slunk over the grass and picked a knife off the ground.
Sophie?
Sophie, go.
Sun will be up any minute.
Sophie, go. Sophie's shrub swiveled and saw the knife rise over Tedros's shoulder. She gasped and hid her eyes. The blade plunged. Tedros saw it hit his heart too late. A shield suddenly smashed the arm down. With a screech, the demon limb shriveled and disappeared. Dazed, Tedros stared at the shallow wound in his chest muscle, the bloody knife on his sternum. He looked up at Agatha, covering her body with his shield.
"Still haven't figured out the clothes bit," she mumbled.
Tedros leapt to his feet in shock. "But you're not even in... What are you..." He saw a shrub quivering behind her. Tedros stabbed his glowing gold fingertip, Corpadora vulvera. Sophie fell forward and hid her body behind a shrub.
"Agatha, I need clothes. Teddy, could you turn around?"
Tedros shook his head. "But the library... that book... You did cheat."
"Teddy, we had to. Agatha, help!"
Agatha pointed her seared, glowing finger at Sophie to wrap her in vines, but Tedros stayed her.
"You said you'd fight with me," he cried, eyes locked on Sophie behind the shrub. "You said you'd have my back."
"I knew you'd be fine. Agatha, please."
"You lied," he said, voice breaking. "Everything you said was a lie. You were using me."
"That's not true, Tedros. No princess would risk her own life, even your truest love."
Tedros glowered, red hot. "Then why did she?" Sophie followed the prince's eyes to Agatha, raw with burns. Agatha saw Sophie's eyes slowly widen, as if discovering a knife stabbed into her back. But just as Agatha tried to defend herself, sunlight exploded into the glen and washed her body in gold. Wolves howled at the gates, sounds of children and footsteps thundered through the forest.
"They did it! They won! Sophie and Tedros won!"
Bodies burst into the glen. Panicked, Agatha lit up her finger and her dove flew away, just as students flooded into view.
"Ever and never!" shouted one. "Witch and prince!" shouted another. "All hail Sophie and Ted!"
The forest went quiet. From a tree, Agatha looked down at the unchosen Evers and Nevers surge in. Then the fallen competitors, healed and cleaned by magic, all frozen as they took in the scene. Sophie cowering behind a bush. Tedros glaring down at her, eyes on fire. And they knew there would never be peace. Evers and Nevers shifted apart, enemies eternal. Neither side could hear the laughter from the tower, half-shadowed, lording over them all.